Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. My guest today is the winner of the Tulsa Libraries Trust 2015 ANVZERO Award for Young Readers Literature. Sharon Draper is being recognized for her over 30 books for children and teens, and she joins a who's who of writers who've won the award when she receives the award and speaks about her work this Friday evening at 7 o'clock at Hardesty Regional Library. Before becoming a successful writer, Draper taught for more than 25 years in the Cincinnati Public Schools as a language arts teacher. She was selected as Ohio's Outstanding English Teacher, the Ohio Teacher of the Year, and the National Teacher of the Year in 1997. She's a five-time Coretta Scott King Award winner, and she also won the 2015 ALA's Margaret Edwards Award for Lifetime Contributions to Young Adult Literature. Her best-known books include Out of My Mind, which was at the top of the New York Times bestseller list for 9 weeks when it was published in 2010, which tells the story of a young girl trying to overcome the physical limitations from cerebral palsy, and the book Copper Sun, a work of historical fiction, which follows 15-year-old Amari forced on a slave ship bound for the Carolinas as she struggles with life as a slave on a plantation. Sharon Draper, again, will be receiving the Zero Award in a public presentation Friday evening at 7 at the Hardesty Regional Library, and she joins us today on Studio Tulsa. Sharon Draper, welcome to Studio Tulsa, and congratulations on the Zero Award.
Well, thank you very much. I'm delighted.
You were a longtime classroom teacher. How did the classroom inform your writing?
I think that I am a better writer because I was a teacher, because I spent so many years working with young people, listening to their stories, learning about their families, just kind of getting to know them as people. And I didn't plan on writing about them. It's just that's what I did. That was my world. So when I write about young people, I have something to draw from. You know, real, not that any story is based on a real person, but I have thousands of lives that have crossed my path, and all of them have influenced me.
Interesting. You know, I've talked to a number of teachers over the years, and they said, you know, the books that inspired kids, some of the books that inspired kids a generation or two ago, don't seem to have that same sort of inspirational qualities to maybe this last generation or so. Did you experience that? And how did that sort of inform what kids want to read?
Well, the world has changed quite a bit since I was a reader as a child. The experiences that young people are faced with and have opportunities to become involved with are just so much vaster than they used to be. You know, we have electronics, we have connections, we can Google anything we want to know. But the thing that remains constant and remains the same, a 13-year-old girl, no matter where she lives or where she's from or anything or what she looks like, is unsure about herself because she's 13. She's either too tall or too short or too fat or too skinny or too smart or not smart enough. There's that sense of hesitancy about life that comes when you turn 13 and when you're 14 and when you're 15. And as long as you understand that the essence of being young hasn't really changed, their world has changed, but the essence of the child has not changed and probably will not. So that is what I focus on. It's not so much the changes in their world, but the constancy of the person that is dealing with that world.
Well, a lot of your writing is focused on the experience kids have today with some really serious issues that some have always been there to one extent to another, but with our faster-paced society, all the communications, all the hurry to grow up, which a lot of everything from television to every sort of media puts on our young people. This seems to be the world that you'd like to write about. Is that something you experience as a teacher, watching these kids struggle with sort of being exposed to a world that's asking them to grow up faster than they really need to?
To some degree, yes. But again, the issues that children have to face today are a little more complicated, a lot more complicated. But how they face them, and I think the reason that young people like my books is because they can identify with the young person. getting along with parents is, or not, is something that is universal and has always been there. The facing of difficulties in life might have increased today, and there are more things and more complicated things that young people have to face, but they still face it with the same lack of surety that they always have. So I give them complex situations. What I do is create a character that has to face a difficult situation, and that gives the reader the chance to not have to deal with that situation. Oh, I read about that. I don't have to deal with that. I have experienced that through a fictional person, but I've learned from it.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, that sense of idealism that's such a part of youth, that's also something you have to write for.
Yeah, but I try to be idealistic but not moralistic.
Right.
I don't want to teach them. I don't want to say thou shalt not. What I want to do instead is say, here are some options. This character made these choices, and this is what happened because of it. You get to make your own decisions, but remember the choices that this character made.
Let's talk about one of your most successful books, and that would be Out of My Mind. This is a really poignant tale. It's about a disabled girl named Melody who is very smart, but she's locked in. She's locked in. She's disabled. She suffers from cerebral palsy. And so she's stuck in the disabled education class where we're going over preschool stuff over and over and over again. Where did this idea for this book come from?
I've probably been working on that book in the back of my mind all my life. When I was a teenager, I used to volunteer at a camp for kids with disabilities. And so I feel comfortable with those kids. When I go to school visits, I will purposely seek out the kids in wheelchairs and the kids from the special class that they make sit in the back of the room, and I will go all the way to the back of the room and speak to them because they're real people, and they have names, and they do know if you take the time to speak to them. So that's just the kind of person that I am. I do have a daughter with a disability, but she is not Melody, and she tells me all the time, well, you tell those people that I am not Melody. But that did give me an insight into that world of special ed and special needs and sometimes very, very unspecial treatment.
Right. And in the case of Out of My Mind, you're talking about a girl who's sort of locked in. She's a smart girl, but can't express herself
right.
to the world.
Brilliant, but she can't, but nobody knows it. That's probably more frustrating than not being able to walk or talk is to be to know the answer and not be able to tell anybody that you do.
Mm. What was the reaction to the book?
It was amazing from the very beginning. Young people started reading it and giving it to their teachers, saying, you've got to read this book. And he says, yes, but Bobby, you don't read. I know, but I love this book, and you have to read this book. So the teachers would read it, and then teachers would share it with other teachers, and parents were reading it, and caregivers, and people with disabilities and people who worked with people with disabilities, and it has just spread all over the world. It's been translated into 17 or 18 languages, I think, and it's been on the New York Times bestseller list for almost 2 years.
Well, the thing about it is that it's so easy to judge from the outside and rather to get to know a child that has trouble expressing themselves, and I think that's the poignant part of this book is that, you know, we judge from surfaces and appearances so much. And, of course, that's a universal theme in a lot of young readers' literature. But especially for someone who is disabled or has a disability.
Well, a lot of teachers have told me, you know, I used to just pass by that classroom in our building and not pay any attention to those children. And I realized that I didn't speak to them. And young people have told me, you know, I have started a club at my school where we go and we read to the kids in room H5 at our building so that there's an eye-opening effect. And I tell kids when I go to schools that if the very least, I want you to say hello. If you see somebody who is in a wheelchair or somebody with a disability, just say hello. It can't hurt. And you might be the only person all day that took the time to speak.
Hmm. from your years in the classroom, I assume you saw all sorts of young readers' literature during the course of your teaching career. Were you always a writer, or did you start writing towards the end of your teaching career?
I was always good at writing, and I was always good at teaching writing. I probably would have been a very good editor because I can read someone else's writing and say, this is what you need to do to fix this. But it didn't really occur to me to write until I had been teaching for almost 20 years. And it happened because I entered a short story contest, it was as a challenge from one of my students that said, why don't you enter this contest? And I did, and I won, and it's like, wow, I can write. So I started my first book, and then it was successful. That was Tears of a Tiger. Mm-hmm. And then that was successful, and then the next one, and then the next one, and I've just been very blessed.
Now, was it difficult balancing writing and teaching at the beginning?
At the beginning, I wrote on weekends. I wrote on holidays. I wrote during summer vacation. My children were old enough to where they could, you know, fix their own lunch. And so I had the time to dedicate to it. It was, looking back, I don't know when I did it, but I found the time in addition to teaching all day and grading papers.
Now, that very first book was, you've never shied away from your subject, and that's one of the toughest subjects around. It's about some young boys that go out after a game and end up drinking, and that episode of drinking and driving results in the death of a friend.
Yes.
Why was that the subject for your first book? What in particular drew you to this particular story?
I don't really know. I get asked that a lot, like, what made you come up with that
sure.
idea?
Yeah.
I don't know, you know, but I know that as a teacher, many, many times there are incidents where we lose students, you know, and over the years of my career, we lost students to traffic accidents, to fires, to gunshots, to various other tragedies. It happens. If you teach long enough, you lose some of your students. And so the trauma that I felt as a teacher when I lost one of my students, and the trauma that my students felt, because if you're 14, it's just more noticeable because I am 14 and I am feeling pain. So all of those kinds of experiences all together, I know what the pain is of kids who have lost someone that they love. And I know what the pain is of teachers who have to stay strong and can't really let their kids know how deeply it hurts them when they come back to school and that desk in the third row is forever empty. So I think it was just a combination of those experiences that I pulled together. And what a writer does is take all of that reality and pull one of them into a fictional something. And that's what I did. I really didn't know what I was doing at the beginning. So.
Well, obviously you knew something because it was a powerful book and it immediately changed your life as far as writing goes.
Yes.
You touched on something, the idea that, you know, when a class loses a classmate, it's a devastating event. We don't think of the teachers and
right.
how, and you actually put it beautifully. He says, you know, I have to put all that aside and be the stoic,
yes.
Sort of comforter, but the strong person in charge. What is that experience like?
It's very, very hard. It's very, very hard because as we move into the school year, we become a family and we love each other and teachers love their students and they love that their kids, and when you have someone who is lost in that classroom, it is very difficult. And nobody sees the teacher's lounge where all of the teachers are gathering in tears. And we, you know, wipe our tears and blow our nose and go back to face the students so that we can be strong for them.
Yeah, you put that mask on. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
My guest today is Sharon Draper, the author of over 30 books for children, young adults, and teens, a 5-time Coretta Scott King Award winner, And this year's ALA, Margaret Edwards Award for Lifetime Contribution to Young Adult Literature. She's also the winner of this year's Anne V. Zero Award for Young Readers Literature, given by the Tulsa Library Trust. And she's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, let's talk about a little more uplifting story, which is your most recent book, Stella by Starlight, which is inspired by your grandmother, Estelle. You have, as I understand it, your grandmother's sole surviving journal. Tell us a little bit about your grandmother, Estelle, and how this informed Stella by Starlight.
My grandmother was born in 1905, and when she was in the fifth grade, she had to stop going to school because they were poor, they lived on a farm, and they needed her to work. And so she had to stop going to school, but she loved school. She loved learning. She was the one child that, had they lived in a different time and place, would have gone to college and done amazing things. But she couldn't. So she would go out at night and write by the light of the moon because she just did not want to lose her connection to education. And I do not know how many notebooks there were originally. But one of those journals, she kept her entire life. So when she passed away in 1983, she gave the last remaining journal to my father and said, do something with this. So my father gave it to me and said, you're a writer, do something with this. And so I had this, it's written in pencil.
Wow.
In an old, old-time pencil in an old-fashioned child's school notebook. And she talked about her hopes and her dreams and her fears. And there's really very little in the book, Stella by Starlight, that was in her journal. It's her essence. It's her spirit that I wrote about, the spirit of this little girl who wanted to write, to learn and wanted to write so much so that she would write at night after she had finished her chores.
Now, you mentioned she wrote by moonlight, and that sounds like a little dramatic, but I'm thinking rural North Carolina, 1915, they probably didn't have electricity.
Oh, no, they didn't have electricity. So she would have to go out at night, and she would write by the light of the moon. That was the only time. She had to work all day. So after everyone had gone to bed, she would sneak out and she would write at night.
Wow.
And somehow I have that journal. So I kept it for a very long time, and I didn't know what to do with it, and I didn't know how to make it a story. So I created a fictional child. I could not write about my grandmother's real life. So Stella in the book is 100% fictional. But she does live in a town very much like the town that my grandmother and my father grew up in and that I used to visit every summer. We used to go and spend summers with my grandmother. That little girl who was 10 was my grandmother now, and I was 10, and we would spend summers there. And so everything that the essence of the book, the spirit of that community, the closeness of the community, how everybody got along and everybody shared and everybody knew everybody's business, all of that is real. The essence of the strength of that community is real.
It sounded like she loved learning, but was she optimistic about the future even though she'd been pulled out of school at fifth grade?
I'm not sure because when I was a child, I didn't know to ask. That's what I tell young people now when I go to their school. I said, talk to your grandmother. Ask. Nobody told me to ask. So I want you to do that. Ask and find out about your past. Find out about what it was like when your grandmother was young. Ask the questions. Turn on the little video thing on your phone and record your grandmother talking about the past. It's important. So what I did was take the essence of this town, the essence of my grandmother, and create a fictional character. Stella in the book also goes outside to write at night, but she doesn't write because she's a lover of learning. She writes because she's afraid she's going to flunk fifth grade and her mother's going to find out. And she's practicing, trying to get better, because education was very important to them.
Yes.
And her parents expected her to make good grades, and she was having difficulty. And I have found kind of, well, as a result of teaching, and especially since I have been traveling around with the book, that there are a lot more kids that struggle in school than are superstars. And the kids who need that encouragement and who need to be shown that if you work and try and strive, that you can make improvements. Because Stella struggles in the book with her writing and with her learning. But I show the progression of how she goes from not so good to a little bit better by the end.
Now, several times in our conversation, you've made the point of saying, now, I took this situation, and I totally fictionalized it. I'm assuming you get a lot of questions thinking that you're taking real-life stories and adapting them rather than creating a fictional situation. Is that a pretty common misperception about your writing, you think?
Yes. And I tell young people, I will tell a group of fifth graders, I'm a professional writer. I lie for a living. I write fiction. None of this is true. And if you tell them like that, it's like I made it up. Yes, I take reality, but the thing is to take reality and make it fictional. That way I can do anything I want with the story. The Stella in the story is not my grandmother, but so I can do anything I want with her. She can be left-handed. She can have thoughts and feelings that my grandmother may never have had. I don't know. I wasn't around when she was 10 years old. So any situation that I have, I fictionalize and let the readers focus on the character and figure out truth through a fictional character.
I'm wondering, do you think you run into that more these days? Because, you know, I keep talking to hear from experts and things who talk about the lack of imaginative play today, and that kids are more likely to take things at face value as opposed to understanding, oh, this is make-believe, or this is fiction. I made this up. This is a story I'm telling you out of thin air.
Well, that could be true. A lot of young people, what they do in their free time, their fictional reality, if you want to call it that, is fantasy. You know, monsters and dragons and things that can fly and vampires and vultures and those kinds of things. So they see fantasy as their reality. So when they see something that deals with real people in real situations, they might tend to think that it's true because nobody flies or bites people in my book. They're real people. And so they think that they're more likely to think that the characters are actually real people. I explain to them, I write what's called realistic fiction, which means it could be true, but it's not because I made it up.
I want to talk about a book called Copper Sun, which is, again, a very personal book. It's a story of slavers coming to an African village and carrying off a 15-year-old girl, Amari, and her adjustment to that story. And I guess this came out of a trip to Ghana that sort of inspired you.
Yes. My first trip to Africa, I fell in love with Africa. I love the air. I love the people. I love the sense of camaraderie. They were such good hosts to me. I was so well treated. But the things that I learned about Africa, I think what changed me was my visit to Cape Coast Castle, which is not a castle but a prison, and the place where the slaves were kept before they were put on a ship and they were sent to other places, the Americas. And so when I went through that castle, and literally a person can feel the presence of the spirits of the people who died there. It's a very palpable kind of feeling. And I went through that door of no return. I crawled through that door of no return. And I imagined what it would be like for someone. And since my characters are all 14, 15 years old, I developed this character who I couldn't talk about all of the 6 million people that were pushed through that door, who were taken out of their country, who were made into slaves. I could only focus on one. And so that one girl is the representative for 15 million people who were taken away from what they knew and what they loved and taken to a place where nothing was ever going to be the same.
Yeah.
So Amari came to me very slowly. That book took almost 10 years to finish.
What do you do when a book takes that long?
I cry a lot.
You set it aside, come back to it?
Yes. I didn't work on it. I think I wrote two other books while I was working on that.
But obviously the story was important enough to keep coming back to it.
Yes. And my editor was very, very influential in me finishing it. I would write a book and then I'd say, go back and let's finish this historical. Let's work on this. So I did tons and tons of research. I learned 10 times more than I could ever put inside the book. The book would be 700 pages long if I put in everything that I learned.
As you well know, that's one of the great temptations of a writer is to write your research.
Yes, it's to write everything. Well, I know all this, and so I have to put it in there. And so I had to, and I have to focus. What would be the experience of one 15-year-old girl at this time, at this place? What would be her experience? I couldn't do what might have happened before her time or what might have happened after her time, but only what might have happened to one girl at this time in this situation.
Well, I have to ask about one other book, and this is because the Romeo and Juliet story has been done by countless writers, screenwriters, and always trying to put something new into this very timeless story. In your case, I believe you changed sexes in Romeo and Julio.
Romeo and Julio, yes.
Why do a Romeo and Juliet story? What was the particular thing you were wanting to tell about, again, this, you know, timeless tragedy?
Okay, I taught ninth grade English for like a million years, and every year we did Romeo and Juliet. I could quote the thing. And I even acted in Romeo and Juliet. When the school did a production of it, I acted in it, and I was Lady Capulet.
Oh.
I knew the play well. And my students would always groan when it came time to do Shakespeare, that we are going to die because we have to do Shakespeare. And I tried to explain to them, this is a timeless story. These are two kids. They're the same age as you are. They were 15, 16 years old who were from the wrong side of the track, the wrong side of town, who wanted to be together, but their families objected to their relationship, and tragedy results because of that. So that's what triggered it, is I wanted to write a modern-day version of the story for my students so they could see that the story, yes, is timeless, and I could write the same story again and just change the characters and change the players. You know, I could make, one Israeli and one Palestinian. I can make one, from one sect or another sect, in Ireland. You know what I mean? I could change it, and it doesn't matter. It's true love trying to find each other over terrible obstacles because society does not want us to be together. It's classic. It's brilliant. And it has existed throughout time and will continue to exist.
Sharon Draper is the winner of the 2015 Ann Wiesner Award for Young Readers Literature. She's the author of over 30 books for children and teens. You can meet her and as she receives the award and talks about her life and career this Friday evening at 7 o'clock at Hardesty Regional Library. For more information on the award and her presentation, visit TulsaLibrary.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.